Good evening? No, good afternoon. It is March 24th, 2024. Interesting. It is 15:43 hours Eastern Daylight Time. And Ward Green with you again today for the study from the Crucible of Credible Creed, Chapter 9, Paragraph 5. We're going to talk about David some more in his chapter, which is Chapter 9 of this article, devoted to King David and the discussion of his life in the context of the chronology and of the Bible, of course. And we're going to be reading some more from the Bible itself in 2 Chronicles, specifically chapter 15. And we're going to begin the book of Micah, chapter 1 of Micah. Now, David is known as the heroic Hebrew youth who slew Goliath, the giant, in the valley of Elah in the days of King Saul. The earliest evidence of a fortified Israelite city is the site of Kirbet Kayafa, reported in 2008, and radiocarbon dating found olive pits on site were there after 1050 BCE. The absence of pig bones amidst thousands of animal bones, a recognizably Judean city plan, and a lack of idolatrous carvings have so far proven that it is an Israelite city. Josef Garfinkel, an archaeologist directing the dig, said, "You have David and Goliath, and you have our site, and it fits. It's typical Judea, from the animal bones to the city wall. Give us two arguments why this is Philistine. One argument is because Finkelstein doesn't want us to destroy low chronology." Okay, so give us a second reason. Israel Finkelstein is the person he refers to there. An ostracon, potsherd with writing, found on site, displays on its face the longest proto-Canaanite text ever found. Many believe the text is an early form of Hebrew alphabet. Based on the radiocarbon dating of olive pits found on the site, Mr. Garfinkel and Mr. Zar Gaynor have dated the city to 1050 to 970 BCE, which in our crucible is fully entrenched within the dominion of Kings David, Solomon, and Rehoboam. Mr. Gaynor discovered the site while patrolling the area in 2003 when he noticed the unusual scale of the city walls. Kirbet Kayafa was initially excavated in 2007, and after the discovery of a second gate in 2008, that's about talking about our common era, not BC, but CE, of the modern times, it was possible, after the discovery of a second gate in 2008, to identify it as the biblical town of Shearim, the town on the road from which the Philistines fled away. In the biblical record, Shearim, also meaning two gates, Shearim, called Elah Fortress, is located 30 kilometers southwest of Jerusalem. That's the same place that they excavated, which is called Kirbet Kayafa today. And Elah Valley below it is due south of it. The site of the city overlooks the Valley of Elah, and the place where David slew Goliath using a sling and stone. So the connection between David and the Valley of Elah is confirmed here by finding a Jewish city of the time of, if not at the time when David slew Goliath, it's of the time shortly thereafter, which probably means that the city was there. Well, it means it was either there during the time preceding David's kingship, or it was there at least by the time of David's kingship or his son's kingship, that same time period. Specifically, though, David's kingship from 1058 includes the time period of 1050, and there are also errors. There are known inaccuracies in carbon dating, which means that the accuracy shown, the range given, is not completely rigid. So this city was possibly there when David slew Goliath in his youth, in David's youth, when he slew Goliath, the giant Philistine. But the thing is, it's not only the date that's so critical, it's the fact that it was an Israelite city so nearby where David slew Goliath, with the place being the Valley of Elah, named in Scripture. That shows that it's very plausible that the story of David in the Bible, talking about the battle when he slew Goliath, that story is validated by this, by the archaeology of the discovery of this city, which was a Jewish city, an Israelite city, so near to the place where the Bible says David slew Goliath. It's a wonderful, magnificent, tangible discovery, archaeologically speaking. And that was a fairly lengthy paragraph. It seemed to go by quite quickly. That's the end of our study for this day. In the Crucible article, Little Children, I've been reading the Trojan War article too. There's a lot of information there, and it's very complex information, and it's rather convoluted information when it comes to the time period of Shoshank the First and Osorkon the First, his son, whom we identify as Shishak, and Zerah, the Ethiopian, his son, as identified, because he's identified as Osorkon the First, Zerah is, but, and that's even from the Ethiopian king's list that Zerah was identified with Osorkon the First. It's not something that was added by us. Micah. Now, we're not ready for Micah yet. We're ready for Chronicles, actually, Second Chronicles, but first, we're not going to do that first. We're going to do our proverb for today, little ones. The way of a man, Proverbs 14 and 12. The way of a man, may he think to be just, but then at its end, it is die as he must. I choked on something. Just a tickle in my throat. Something. The way of a man, may he think to be just, but then at its end, it is die as he must. Now that, recently I've come to realize, it's not necessary that we die. It's possible that it's necessary that we die. But it says here in the American Standard Version, if you follow your own ways, it might seem right to you, but the end afterward is death. In other words, it's when men follow their own way, then they must die, because their own way will not lead to life. Only Jehovah can give everlasting life through his son Jesus. But this is it. Then at its end, it is die as he must, because he thought his own way was just. So at the end, or his end, or at the end of his way, He's going to die, as he must, because he followed his own way. Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 15. Now, as for Azariah, the son of Oded, the Spirit of God came to be upon him. Consequently, he went out before Asa and said to him, "Hear me, O Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. Yahweh is with you as long as you prove to be with him. And if you search for him, he will let himself be found by you. And if you leave him, he will leave you." And many were the days that Israel had been without a true God, and without a priest teaching, and without law. But when in their distress they returned to Yahweh, the God of Israel, and looked for him, then he let himself be found by them. And in those times there was no peace for one going out or for one coming in, because there were many disorders among all the inhabitants of the lands. And they were crushed to pieces, nation against nation and city against city, because God himself kept them in disorder with every sort of distress. And you, be courageous, and do not let your hands drop down, because there exists a reward for your activity. And as soon as Asa heard these words and the prophecy of Oded the prophet, he took courage and proceeded to cause the disgusting things to vanish from all the land of Judah and Benjamin, and from the cities that he had captured from the mountainous region of Ephraim, and to renew Jehovah's altar that was before the porch of Jehovah. And he began to collect together all Judah and Benjamin and the alien residents with them, from Ephraim and Manasseh and Simeon, for they had deserted to him from Israel in great number when they saw that Jehovah his God was with him. So they were collected together at Jerusalem in the third month of the 15th year of Asa's reign. This was after the battle against Zerah the Ethiopian in chapter 14. So the battle against Zerah was either in year 14 or year 15, it would seem, because this happened soon after. Then they sacrificed to Jehovah on that day from the spoil they had brought. Now I said that was from the spoil of the battle against the Ethiopians, but what did it say in chapter 14 about the Ethiopian army? There were 1 million that they fought against. 1 million men and 300 chariots. So you'd think if they had 1 million men, they would have had to have had some livestock or something with them in order to feed all those men. But it said here, they carried off a great deal of spoil, 2 Chronicles 14, verse 13. They also struck a lot of cities around Gerar, and so they may have taken spoil there. It says they plundered all the cities, so that's where they got the spoil. So the spoil came about because of this battle against the Ethiopians. It would appear from that. So, yeah, we see that this must have been around year 14 or 15, which validates the chronology of the Bible, as well as the Egyptian chronology in Manetho regarding how many years Osorkon ruled. And that is in our chronology from 959 BCE to 944. 15 years. As in a complete agreement with Manetho. Now, and as soon as Asa heard these words in the prophecy of Oded the prophet, he took courage and proceeded to cause the disgusting things to vanish from all the land of Judah and Benjamin, and from the cities that he had captured from the mountainous region of Ephraim, and to renew Jehovah's altar that was before the porch of Jehovah. Okay. That was in the 15th year, verse 10 there. Then they sacrificed to Jehovah from the spoil they had brought 700 cattle and 7,000 sheep. Furthermore, they entered into a covenant to search for Jehovah, the God of their forefathers, with all their heart and with all their soul, that anyone that would not search for Jehovah, the God of Israel, should be put to death, whether small or great, whether man or woman. So they swore to Jehovah with a loud voice, and with joyful shouting, and with the trumpets, and with horns, and all Judah gave way to rejoicing over the thing sworn, for it was with all their heart that they had sworn, and with full pleasure on their part, with full pleasure on their part, that they had looked for him, so that he let himself be found by them, and Yahweh continued to give them rest all around. As for even Maacah, his grandmother, Asa the king himself removed her from being lady, because she had made a horrible idol for the sacred pole. And then Asa cut down her horrible idol and pulverized it and burned it in the torrent valley of Kidron. And the high places themselves did not disappear from Israel. The high places were not approved of by Jehovah. Only Asa's heart itself proved to be complete all his days. And he proceeded to bring the things made holy by his father and the things made holy by himself into the house of the true God, silver and gold and utensils. As for war, it did not occur down to the 35th year of Asa's reign. There was a battle against the Ethiopians, but that apparently did not constitute war because it was not ongoing, didn't continue, it was a one-time event. But this, anyway, after that 15th year, there was no war until the 35th year of Asa's reign. Apparently they had a lot of peace during his reign. The time of his reign was a very peaceful one on the whole, we could say. Next, Micah chapter 1. The word of Jehovah that occurred to Micah of Moresheth in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, kings of Judah. They were father, son, and son. In other words, grandfather, father, and son. Kings of Judah that he visioned, that is Micah, concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. Now Adam Clark in his commentary, let's take a look at it. Maybe we can find it here. I did find it the other day. I found Adam Clark. Is that it? Don't think so. No. Let's see, we should be able to find it here somewhere. What can we do? Let's see. We had it here before. Where is it? The commentary of Adam Clark. Oh, there it is. There it is. Of course. That was his commentary on 2 Chronicles 14. And on 15, that's 2 Chronicles, we can go now, jump down to Micah. And we have Micah chapter 1. Micah of Moresheth, or the Morasthite, or of Moresa, a village near the city of Eleutheropolis in the southern part of Judah, is the sixth in order of the 12. He's the sixth of the 12 minor prophets. In order. Let's see, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, that's six. In the order that's given to us from the Hebrew Bible, the order that was passed down to us from the order of the prophets. I'm assuming it's the same as that in the Hebrew Bible or in the Tanakh. There's so many things to research, you know, it's hard to research all of them all at the same time. You can't do it. But we will get to that, I'm sure. The Spurious Book of Dorotheus, or Person of Dorotheus, is mentioned here. Clark says that Micah prophesied for about 50 years during the reigns of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Right. There's some interesting points in the book of Micah. It's similar to the time of Isaiah, and he mentions the beating of swords into plowshares, which is another thing that is also mentioned by, or one thing that's also mentioned by Isaiah. Now, verse 2, Micah says, "Hear, O you peoples, all of you, pay attention, O earth, and what fills you, and let the sovereign Lord Yahweh serve against you as a witness. Yahweh from his holy temple. For look, Jehovah is going forth from his place, and he will certainly come down and tread upon earth's high places, and the mountains must melt under him. And the low plains themselves will split apart like wax because of the fire, like waters being poured down a steep place. It is because of the revolt of Jacob that there is all this, even because of the sins of the house of Israel." Israel being the same person as Jacob, of course. What is the revolt of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? And what are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? Meaning that Jerusalem is not a righteous place. And I shall certainly make Samaria a heap of ruins of the field, the planting places of a vineyard. And I will pour down into the valley her stones, and her foundations I shall lay bare. Referring to Samaria. And her graven images will all be crushed to pieces, and all the gifts made to her, as her hire, will be burned in the fire, and all her idols I shall make a desolate waste. For from the things given as the hire of a prostitute she collected them, and to the thing given as the hire of a prostitute they will return. On this account I will wail and howl. I will walk barefoot and naked. This is something that is not part of what Jehovah said. This is what Micah wrote. Because the end of the quote was, they will return. It was the end of the quote from what Jehovah said. Or at least what Micah said about Jehovah going forth from his place. Then he wrote, verse 8, Micah wrote, "On this account, I will wail and howl, I will walk barefoot and naked," which is similar to what Isaiah wrote in Isaiah 20 and 2. Jehovah said by the hand of Isaiah, "Go and you must loosen the sackcloth from off your hips," Isaiah 20 and 2, "and your sandals you should draw from off your feet," and he proceeded to do so, walking about naked and barefoot. That's similar to what Micah writes here about the naked and barefoot. "I shall make a wailing," Micah goes on, "like the jackals, and a mourning like female ostriches." A grieving, in other words. A grieving process, like female ostriches. Verse 9, "For the stroke upon her is unhealable, for it has come as far as Judah." The stroke upon Samaria has come as far as Judah. "The plague as far as the gate of my people, as far as Jerusalem." Verse 10, "In Gath, do not you men tell it out. Positively do not weep. In the house of Aphra, wallow in the very dust. Make your way across, O inhabitress of Shaphir, in shameful nudity. I don't say that word often enough to know how to pronounce it. Nudity. What's the best way to say it? Nudity, probably. The inhabitants of Zaanan has not gone forth. The wailing of Beth Ezel will take from you people its standing place. Whatever that means. For the inhabitants of Meroth has waited for good, but what is bad has come down from Jehovah to the gate of Jerusalem. We can look at the Insight book under Beth Ezel, a town evidently in Judah mentioned in Micah's prophecy foretelling the disaster due to come upon unfaithful Samaria and Jerusalem. Okay, the word Aphra might mean dust, so the house of Aphra is to wallow in the very dust in verse 10, and the word Aphra might mean dust. And the word Shaphir, the location, means, at least according to the Insight book here, means elegant, polished, agreeable. The wailing of Beth Ezel, meaning house nearby, will take from you people its standing place. The prophet's warning directed to those due to experience the disaster, thus in effect tells them that the wailing will spread to as far as Jerusalem. Now, verse 12, for the inhabitress of Meroth, that's the female inhabitant of Meroth, has waited for good, but what is bad has come down from Jehovah to the gate of Jerusalem. I'm looking for Meroth here. Yes. Oh, the word Meroth is from a root meaning bitter. Okay. So it's like the place names are going to be fulfilled in this prophecy is what it's saying. Attach the chariot, verse 13, to the team of horses, O inhabitress or female inhabitant of Lachish. The beginning of sin was what she was to the daughter of Zion. See, the daughter of Zion is a female inhabitant of Zion. The thing is, there in the prophecy, the inhabitants are always referred to as female, because the cities are female also. So the cities are referred to as she and her. And so it's very plausible here that it really just means the inhabitant of Lachish, anyone, not just the women. For in you the revolts of Israel have been found, speaking to the inhabitress of Lachish. Therefore you will give parting gifts to Moresheth Gath, verse 14 that is, the houses of Achzib were as something deceitful to the kings of Israel. The dispossessor I shall yet bring to you, O inhabitress of Marisha. As far as Adullam, the glory of Israel will come. Cause baldness and shear your hair off on account of your sons of exquisite delight. Now that's possibly referring to the female inhabitants. Cause baldness, cut their hair off as a shameful thing to express how ashamed they are of the fact that they're guilty and they're going to be punished here. Broaden out your baldness like that of the eagle, because they've gone away from you, that is, your sons of exquisite delight. That's the part that I wanted to mention here. This is so poetic, is it not? Cause baldness and shear your hair off on account of your sons of exquisite delight. Your sons of exquisite delight means your children. They're going to suffer because of this punishment coming upon them. So you need to do something to express your shame so that Jehovah might take some mercy on you, or because you are going to be greatly embarrassed by this. Broaden out your baldness like that of the eagle, because they, that is your children, have gone away from you into exile. Your sons of exquisite delight are going to be taken captive, in other words, is what it says, and that's what happened. Of course, it happened to the northern kingdom of Samaria, of with its capital city somewhere other than Samaria, very probably, but Samaria, as we talked about before, the capital city was another city in the northern kingdom. The kingdom of the northern kingdom of Israel is called Samaria, though, is it not? I think we call it Samaria as referring to the northern kingdom. It can be referred to as Samaria, even though Samaria wasn't the actual place where the kings lived, necessarily, but it was considered sort of the capital city in some sense. Broaden out your baldness because your children have gone away from you into exile. And also we know that Judah was taken into exile when Jerusalem was conquered by Nebuchadnezzar also, sometime later. And the conquest of Samaria was 719 BCE in our chronology, a very firm date now, very well expressed in our chronology according to many different facts, like the lunar facts of the fact of the lunar alignment being important because of the 3 years that were mentioned, and which we've discussed also before, and the siege being from 722 to 719, it fits that description of the 3 years, but also, you know, according to the lunar calendar, but also the siege of Jerusalem in 587 fits all the facts as well, including the fact that it happened on a Sabbath day. All those things. So that's all for the burning of the temple, that is. So that's all for our study for March and our video for March 24th, 2024. The time is 16:16 hours Eastern Daylight Time. It's been wonderful to be with you. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. Now, in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie, saying bye for now.